Welcome, everyone. So this talk will indeed be about F sharp. No surprises there, I guess. So there's going to be quite a lot of typing. I'm going to have to do quite a lot of typing to give some demos here. So if I'm going too fast or too slow, if you can't see something, please just shout something or raise your hand so that I can zoom in or whatever. Okay. So, first of all, this session is going to be largely based on a session that Luca Bolognese did at PDC 2008. Not because I'm too lazy to, well, not only because I'm too lazy to make my own presentation, but just because I think it's a really good introduction to F-sharp. And also, if you want to have a look at this presentation again, it's going to be taped, I think, and or you can look at that one. It will provide more or less the same content. Also, you can always contact me at any of those, in any of those ways. So I guess you've all been programming for the .NET platform, right? It's a nice platform to program to, not only just for the let's say the APIs themselves, but also all the tool support that surrounds that, all the infrastructures that you get, both open source, both Microsoft or other vendors provide a lot of stuff that you can use, use to make your own things. But in one respect, so there is a lot of diversity there, right? There's a lot of stuff that you can choose from. But in one respect, in the respect of the programming languages that we use, they're all basically, let's say, imperative. You have your C# and your VB, which are statically typed O languages, which you use to do imperative programming. If you go a bit further out, you have Iron Python and Iron Ruby, which are dynamically typed, but still are doing imperative programming. What do I mean by imperative programming? I mean you're using mutable states, you're using loops, all the stuff that you're basically accustomed to. But this stuff is basic. It's really it's very explicit in the sense that you're really being very explicit about manipulating memory, manipulating control flow. And this gives rise to a number of problems. It provides a lot of opportunity for mistakes, which you may like to avoid. And also, especially in the sense that with a recent, let's say, fairly recent focus on concurrency, it becomes sort of clear that there may be better ways to go about this. But there wasn't really a language on the .NET platform, at least, that provided a more declarative form of programming. And F# sort of fills that void. So if you want to have a sort of anecdote to compare declarative versus imperative programming, it's like you go to a bar and you order a beer. If you would do that in an imperative way, you would go to the barman, you would say, right, I'd like you to take this glass, I'd like you to hold it under the tap, then pull the lever so that the beer flows out, and then I want you to tilt the glass and put the lever back up, but I want you to do those things in parallel so that it's goes nicely together. While in a declarative way, you would just say, I'd like a beer, please. So that's a bit the idea behind our declarative programming. Of course, it's not really that easy, but we're going to get there. So now I'm just going to drop to a demo, really. So F# is a language that is being called a first class language for a .NET platform. That means it has all the same level of tool support that you're going to get used to from a C# and VB. So I'll do all my F# demos here in Visual Studio. This is a beta 2 of Visual Studio. And F# will also be available for the RTM version, of course. So it will have. I will not sort of be explicit about it, but you will see while I'm typing in some functions, you will see that there is IntelliSense. You will see that are the squiggly lines, right, that show you errors and all that stuff. So basically the same thing as you're used to in C# or VB or whatever. So what is this? This is just on the top there. This is just Visual Studio with an open edit text file. And on the bottom here, there is a thing that is called F-sharp interactive. And what is that? It is just a way. So in here, I can just type stuff, F-sharp code. I can select it, and I can send it to this bottom window over there, F-sharp interactive. And it will just compile it on the fly, execute it, and you can manipulate stuff with that. So this offers a very interactive way of doing programming. So F-sharp, what is F-sharp? F-sharp is a functional language. Well, it's a lot of things. It's mainly a functional language, but you can also do imperative programming with it, and you can also do object-oriented programming with it. So what I'd like to do in a first sort of chapter, let's say, of this presentation is to show you sort of the steps towards a more declarative style of programming. I'm going to write a series of simple programs in F-sharp. I'm going to do that in such a way that I'm going to write the same program every time. I'm going to write it in different ways, and the last one will be the sort of way you would do it in F-sharp. But first, let's introduce a few simple keywords. So one of the most important keywords in F-sharp is let. What does let do? Let allows you to define a new symbol and bind it to a value. So the new symbol that I'm defining here, the new name, is called A, and the value is 3. This is not the same as a variable in C-sharp or in VB, right? This is more like a constant. That means I am not doing assignment here. I am really giving the name A to the value 3. It's immutable. A is immutable in this case. So I'll just show you now. I select this, press Alt Enter. And now at the bottom here, you can see that there is a new value A defined in F-sharp interactive. Is this readable for everyone in the back? Yeah? So I can now ask for this variable here. And it still knows it, right? It says the value A is 3. Okay, pretty simple. Let also serves to define new functions. So if I want to define a function that squares a value, I just call use let again. I can give it a parameter called x, right? And now I have defined this function here, and I can use it at the bottom. I can take the square of 3, right? And that is 9, of course. So let allows you to define new values and new functions. Now let's start our little sequence of three little programs. So the three, I'd like to write a function that takes as arguments a sequence, let's say an IR numerable or a list of values, and I want to write a function that squares each value and then sums them all together. Right? So simple sums of square function. So of course I use again the let construct. The first one I will do in an imperative way, so I will call it sums of squares I. And I will just take in an argument that is the list of numbers. So how would you do that in an imperative way? You would just use a for loop, right? You would just, let's say, define an accumulator which you initialize to 0, and then you would loop over the numbers and just progressively take the sum of take the square of each number and add it to the accumulator. Now notice here that I've used a new keyword, mutable. So I've used the let to define a new value, but since I'm now using the keyword mutable, that means that the ACC variable here is really a variable as you're used to it in C-sharp or in VB. So notice that F-sharp lets you do everything you can do in C-sharp or VB or in any imperative programming, it lets you do that as well, but it sort of reverses the defaults, right? The default in C-sharp is to have mutable stuff, mutable variables. In F-sharp, the default is to have immutable, but you can make them mutable by adding a new keyboard, and that is this mutable thing. So now I will go So this is my imperative implementation of the sum of square functions. Define a new variable x, do a loop, and add the square of each number to this accumulator, and then return the accumulator. You can just return values in F-sharp by writing the value itself without the return keyword, as I did at the bottom. Notice also that I didn't need to use any curly braces or semicolons or any of that. That's because F-sharp is read step as significant characters. So it knows that because I've put this in a more indented way, that this is all part of this function SOSI. And the same here, it knows that this thing is part of the loop because it is more indented than it is part of the loop. So it's indentation aware. This is called indentation aware. And it makes your programs a lot more direct. I mean, there's less fluff, there's less ceremony, there's less of all these superfluous characters. Because this is the way you would write it anyway, right? If you would use braces or semicolons, this is the way you would indent your program. And now you can just do it directly, and F-sharp knows how to deal with that. Notice also that I've not used equals here. I've used this special character, which means assignment. So again, F-sharp, the default usage for equals in F-sharp is equality, which it should be. If you want to do assignment, which is really a different thing, you use this other character. So let's try our function. So now I've sent it to F-sharp Interactive. I can call it. All right, so I've taken the sum of squares of the list 1, 2, 3, and the result is 14. So that's the imperative version that you should be sort of accustomed to. Let's put that away. Now let's think about how a mathematician would write such a function. I guess he would think about it this more. Sorry, he would think about this more in a sort of inductive way. He would say, "Okay, the sum of squares of a list of numbers is if the length of the list is zero, then the sum is zero, and if you have the sum of squares of a list of n." Numbers, then you add the square of the last number to it, and that's your sum of squares. Sort of more of a recursive definition. And we can write that as well in F sharp. And that sort of leads naturally, to the introduction of a new keyword, the match keyword. Now, let me just write what I want to write before I explain it. So, a few things to note. So, because this is a recursive function, I'm calling SOSM into the function SOSM, I need to use the rec keyword here. Basically, this just means that if you don't use the rec keyword, then SOSM, then the name of your function will not be defined inside your function body. This is just a technicality, I guess. The interesting thing here is this match construct. So what does this do? You can sort of compare match. This is the pattern matching construct. This is what it's called. You can compare this with a switch statement on steroids. So what it does, not only does it allow you to select cases based on what this number is here, but it also allows you to define new variables by sort of pattern matching what is on the left side here with the effective variables. So what this says is, if numbers is an empty list, and this is sort of the simple symbol that denotes an empty list, then the result of sum of squares of an empty list is zero. That's what this says. If, however, numbers is a list composed of a first element, which is not So the list is not empty, so it has at least one element. Then bind the new variable or the new name x to this first element of the list, and bind the name x's to the rest of the list. And what you can then do is just square x, because that is now the first element in the list, and do a recursive call to your sum of square functions to take the squares of the rest of the list. Right? So pattern matching is selection. You choose, you can choose between different cases, and binding. At the same time, you can bind names to parts of the thing that you're matching against. Right? So it's fairly natural once you sort of get to know the thing. So this double colon here really means, okay, this is a list. This means it's a pattern for a list with the first element and the rest. So let's convince ourselves that this works. Right. So again, the sum of squares, mathematical, is 14. But still, this is not the way that you would typically. This is the way that you would sometimes write functions in F sharp, but not typically, and certainly not simple functions like this. So let's now write the way that you would do it in a functional style. And in a functional style, what you have in F sharp are available a set of what are called combinators or list processing functions. Because you're doing a lot of, in functional languages, you tend to do a lot of stuff that is data oriented. Because you tend to avoid mutation, you sort of take input data as input, transform it into something else, and then have a result without ever mutating anything. And there is a lot of support for that in the library. So I'm going to introduce a new, not a keyword, but an operator, which is called the pipeline operator. And what this basically does is sort of similar to what you might be used to in shell kind of things like Bash or Windows shell has it as well. It sort of takes the value before it and pipes it as arguments in the function that will follow. Let me again just write, and then I'll explain it. So what have we done here? We've started out with our numbers, which is our list of numbers, and then we've applied the function map to it. And what does map do? Sequence here, this sec here, is basically sort of a module, or let's say a static class that has a number of utility functions defined upon it that work on IEnumerables. Sequence is a sort of alias in F sharp for IEnumerable. That's all it is. So the map function takes as arguments two things: another function, in this case, the square function, and here the input list that it needs to transform. And what it will do is it will apply the function that it's given to each element in the list. So this will basically just square each element in the list of numbers. That's what this second line will do. Once we have the squares of all our numbers, all we need to do is just sum them, and that is exactly what this handy sum function does. So this pipeline operator here is crucial, because you can keep on pipelining stuff. So you're just taking as input something, you're doing something to it, then you're doing the next step, and the next step, and the next, until you're basically at your result. And that's typically how you would do this in a functional language. So again, let's see if this works. And it does. Again, it outputs 14. So that's sort of the result. So let's just briefly go over this again. So we introduced the let keyword, which gives a symbol or a name to a value. It's immutable. The let keyword can also be used to define a new function in this style. Now, I've been saying Well, this let thing just defines a new symbol and gives it to a value. That's exactly what it does also in the case of function. So this syntax is really just syntactic sugar for this, which is again the same sort of principle, right? This is a name, and you define and you give this name to a value, except now it is just a function value, right? Functions are just values like 3 or 4 in functional languages as well. And you can define sort of an anonymous function with the keyword fun. So this is this means exactly the same as the previous slide. This is just syntactic sugar for this. So this is the imperative version. Again, notice that I can make stuff into variables just like you're used to them in C# as well, using other keywords, other assignment operators, but they work just the same. The pattern matching construct, right? It does selection and binding. And then this is how you would write it in a functional way, which is kind of neat because you have sort of this intuition that it allows you to, it abstracts the control flow better. It is easier to parallelize. In fact, there are a few utility functions available that allow you to exchange the sec by a psec, and this would just be parallelized sort of automatically, semi-automatically. Notice the importance of the pipeline operator, which you will see again in the next of this talk. So that's a bit the first part. At this point, I'd like to just take a short break to see if there are any questions about this piece here before we go into a more, let's say, scaled up example, where I will show some more stuff also about the OO part. Was all crystal clear? All right. Great. So, I mean, okay, this is great. You know, you can write the sum of square functions. Ooh, that's very good. So, of course, the real world is a bit messier than that, right? So, I'd like to show you, in the limited means and time that I have available, of course, a somewhat bigger example of how you would do let's say something a bit more in a bit more messier domain. And so, what I'd like to do for that is write something that's. So, what I've done here is downloaded a bunch of text files, which contain. This one doesn't contain much, but this one. This contains basically, it's a very simple text format. Can you sort of read that? Just 4 columns. The first 3 columns contain a date. So I think the first one is a month, and the second is a day, sort of in American format, and then the year. And this is a temperature that was measured on a certain station on the world in that day. And so with all this global warming stuff, and I actually made this during Copenhagen, so I was a bit inspired by that. It's a bit too late now for it, but anyway. So I've got all this list here. And let's just say that I want to do some, I don't know. I want to see if this global warming stuff makes any sense. I want to do my own experiments, whatever. I just want to do some operations on this data, right? And I want to write an F# program to do that. So I would do that in pretty much the same way as I've been demonstrating all along. I would just sort of go along and try explore the domain first, and then try to build that up into a nicer API. So just to begin, let's see if I can have a. I would just say, okay, I'd like to start with a station name, Australia, Sydney. Like this. Make a file name here. Just getting a bit ready for parametrization. Okay. So I guess I want to read the file, right? So I'm gonna open text. See IntelliSense popping up here. Works just the same. I want to have it as text. So I guess I want to say read. Right. So you see, I can just call in the same APIs as you're used to. It's just exactly the same. I can call methods, I can call properties, all of that. So, and then I want to do my actual processing. And now I want to just show you basically that this sort of pipeline compositional kind of thing, that this also works for this kind of more of that messy domain. So what I'd like to have at the end of this this thing in my data variable is to is have, let's say, a nice date time and a nice temperature in degrees that I can do something with. So I will do this just in the same way. I'll start with the text that we have. And now what I should just do is split it. First in new lines. So this syntax here, this is just shorthand in F sharp for defining a new array. And this is just a character. So I'm just going to split all the text into lines, basically. So now I have an array of lines in my text. I can just, now I want to do each for something for each line. So I'm going to use our map operator that we've defined before. And since this map operator function takes another function as argument, I'm just going to define one in line. And I do that with a fun keyword, right? So in each line, I want to split again. There's something that I sort of didn't emphasize. But notice that, so who thinks that F sharp is a dynamically typed language? No one. So you all think it's statically typed. It is. But notice that I've never have to give any type annotation. I've never typed any actual types. That's because F sharp is smart enough to do type inference, something that is called type inference, which basically it sort of works backwards. So it sees here, oh, this station here, and you can see this in IntelliSense in the pop-up in the tooltip. It sees that, oh, this is a string, so this must be a string as well. It sees that this is a string or a concatenation of strings, so that must be a string as well. Now it says, oh, I'm calling something here on a string, so this must be a stream reader, and so on. And it can do this basically for arbitrary functions. Sometimes you have to give it a little hint if it doesn't know how to work out, if it gets confused, but mostly it works very well, and you don't have to write very much types at all, while still having the same static type safety as you're used to in C sharp or in VB. So it just sort of takes out all the ceremony that you have to write. So this was I was writing this. So now I just basically want to so now I have each line. I want to split these in each values. So I want to split this on just space, really. And I have a nice option here. Remove empty end. Okay, so now we can already see what we have, if this works. Doesn't find the file, that's, yeah. So there it is. I can just show the data that we have so far. So you can see already that we've sort of split up the data into lines, and we made nice little strings of all the different parts. So now it's kind of, this is something that I know that some files are not so well formed, so what I do here is I forgot the keywords. So this is another function filter, which just takes as input a list of values, and it keeps only those values in the list for which this sort of predicate is true. So I'm just keeping all the values in the list that contain four elements, because I know when I prepared this that some of them don't work, and then it becomes really messy. Have less or more values, so it becomes a bit messy then. So now I'd like to turn these strings into somewhat interesting objects. So, and how do I do that? I just map over each line again. And so the first three parts would be a good candidate to make for a date time. So let's do that. This is a nice way to introduce in F#. You have also this named, you can name parameters in F#. Just by giving it the name that the actual declaration has, putting equals and then the value you want for that, which I find very useful, especially for daytime, because I always get confused in which order I need to put this stuff. So the day is, I guess, the... It's not doing much. Busy. All right, there we are. That was a very useful pop-up. So the month is the first value, and the year is the third value. So that's nice. So we have a date time now. We'd also like to return the degrees. Oh, I should convert all these things. First insert to ints. So and therefore I have this little handy function int, which just takes really anything, sort of, and converts it to an int. So and now I'm going to introduce something new, which is tuples. So in F# you have built-in tuples, which you can construct by using just comma. So basically what I'd like to return now is a combination of a date time with the temperature on that date. And instead of having to make a new type with two properties and all that, it's really just sometimes easier just to be able to return just those two values. Certainly in functional languages where you return kind of multiple values all the time and you don't really want to use the out keyword. So in this case we can just easily take the last value. Oh, this is wrong, right? This is 2. And this is 3. I'm going to put this on a new line. That will be easier to read. Like this. I want to convert that to a float. And then I want to convert that to Celsius, because it's in degrees Fahrenheit. Don't know if you noticed. And this function, because I see that you're getting bored with my amazing typing skills, I just put those in here. Right, so you can define new functions inside let constructs, use let again, and define new sub-functions in that sort of to keep them contained. This is what I show here. So let's try that, see what we get. Seems to work. So now I think, oh, that's not good. So now we have this data here in an sort of more readable format. You see here that there have been sort of converted to types. So this is a date time here, and the other part of the tuple is a degrees in Celsius. I think I made a little So now we can put them in a grid. Grid is a little helper thing that I made earlier just to put the stuff. So now you can see that it's really a tuple, right? Okay. So now that we've done that, this is still sort of, you know, exploratory. We're still playing around with this stuff. It's very easy because of this indentation aware syntax to make this into a function, actually. You don't really need any refactoring. You can just go like this. You just need tap, really. Say, okay. Put this up there. Let's take all of this, tab it. Put it together a bit. Just return the result here. And this is our getTemperatures function, which just takes as parameter a station that we'd like the temperatures for. And it returns, as you can see, this sequence, which is just an iron numerable of date, times, and floats, which are the temperatures that we want. This is a symbol for a tuple. So notice also that I've, again, I've never given any types, but it just sort of magically found those. See also here, importance of the pipeline operator again, sort of makes all this stuff very easy to combine and very easy to use. Okay. So now, so I've shown you basically how to call C#, .NET APIs from F#, right? So you know that you can interoperate, let's say, with all of .NET easily. I'd also like to show you now how you can call F# things that you have written in F# from other languages, right? Which is sort of the reverse sort of aspect. And basically, this getTemperatures function is already callable in a way from other languages. It's just sort of it's really compiled as a static member on a static class that is defined for you. But it's not really, let's say, well, a nice way to do that. So what we'll do now, just take all this. So what I've been doing up until now is writing everything in these FSX files. You can see this here. These files are called FSX files. That means that they are F# interactive files. So if you put these files in a project, they will not be compiled with your project. They're just files that are used sort of to do this interactive, this exploratory style of programming where you type something, you send it to F# Interactive, you explore sort of the domain. Of course, when you want to go on, when you've sort of stopped exploring and want to really build an assembly, then what you should use is FS files. And that's what I've sort of prepared here. So let's just take all this stuff and put it in an FS file in a project that I've defined. And let's make a nicer API for it. So let's define a new type, let's say a new, as you're used to it, a new class type. Let's call it a climate analyzer. And it's going to take two parameters. And here I am giving types. That's because in this case, this is a case where I know sort of from experience that F# would be a bit, let's say, confused if I would not do it. So what I'm doing here is, notice again, that is a very terse. I'm really writing both a class and a constructor at the same time here. So sort of, so instead of writing public class climate analyzer, and then open braces, and then you would have to write a constructor, right? Public climate analyzer, give all your arguments. You can write this here in a very short way. You're just defining a new class. And at the same time, these are the constructor arguments. So this is the same class, and it has a constructor with two, which takes two parameters. And you can write this in this very easy way. And then you can do all the same stuff that you're used to. So you can have, for example, a property. The station name would be a nice property for this class, right? You can just define that property like this. I can already show you that this is in fact the case. See, it has your new member station name, which returns a string. Notice that it's very easy to define this property. I can just refer to these names right here. Don't need to define any fields or stuff like that. You can just define to these names, refer to these names in all of your type, really. So let's write the other easy property. Right, same thing. And again, I've got a whole bunch of these here. So I'll just go over these. The actual content of these properties is not so, properties and functions is not so important. I just want to show you how to, that it's possible to define just a vanilla object-oriented class type in F# as well, right? You can you can have your properties, you can have your methods. These are properties here. This is a method. You can see it by the, you can see it by the braces here. This is just something that returns the average per year. Notice again that I'm using the pipeline operator. I'm using these functions here. I'm using a group by. This is, if you're familiar with link, this is sort of, you can sort of compare it to that. If you're familiar with link, this will probably come quite easy for you to do. So again, a few properties, few functions. I can also define a static function like this. So what if I want to, for example, make it easier to like have a little factory function, and then I can have this. So this is just a factory, let's say a little factory method to make a bunch of climate analyzers from a series of names. That's right. Okay, so let's see if we can get this compiled. So I can really, actually I can show you. So this is just this little demo project I have here on the right. So I have this climatefiles.fs. That's really the file I've been typing in this last thing. And here's a little C# project, which just which I'm going to use this stuff, which just references the demo F# project as you would reference any other project. Right? There's nothing magical about this, really. It just sort of works the way you would expect it. So I'll just close this. So now, you see that it's defined here. I have my climate analyzer type here. I can have my get climate analyzer functions here, and I can just pass in a bunch of names. And what is the scene? Oh, yeah. Right, and that would just, and now you can just for each over those. Oh. Right, so again, this would be just a collection of IEnumerable T, where T is your climate, the climate analyzer type that we defined previously. So let's just do something with that. here you can find all the properties that we've defined, right? So the station name. So it doesn't really matter what is. It's not very scientific, of course, but this just take the difference between the average temperature in the first year and the average temperature in the last year. And I have here. What's the problem? All right. Right, so this is just, this sort of shows how that works. I think I can run it probably. Right, so this is just C# calling F# code. It's printing out what we said that it would print out. Okay, so that's that. Now, one last thing I'd like to show is how straightforward, or sort of straightforward, it is to convert this. Because what we're doing now is just really reading in each file, doing some processing on it, and then going on to the next one. Right? While if you have a large number of these files, what you'd really like to do is sort of do that in an asynchronous way. You'd like to start reading one file, then doing you'd like to start reading a bunch of files, doing some processing on that while the hard disk will keep on reading maybe the next files while you do some more processing and sort of make this more dynamic, more asynchronous really. And it is fairly easy to convert an F# project program or a function to an F# equivalent function that does this stuff in an asynchronous way, and that's what I'd like to show you. So let's start a new file here. Notice that I've added an extra open statement, which you should not be worried about. So, and this is basically the thing that we want to convert into something that does asynchronous processing, right? Instead of reading this file here all at once, we'd like to read a bunch of files and basically stop here until the file is sort of ready to read and then continue. Let me show you, instead of waffling on, what I really mean. And how you can do that in F# is by wrapping your function in this async sort of block, and async. This is called a computation expression. I don't know why they called it that, but basically what it does is it takes in. It's sort of like it can be compared to link. It's also closely related to monads in functional programming languages, but you don't need to really know all that. Basically, what you can do is to it's redefine how operations work inside an async block. And you can define your own async, not async block, but any kind of computation expression block in F#. But I won't go into that. And I'll just show you what it sort of takes to convert this code into an asynchronous So all I need to do is here add a return statement, which needs to be explicit in an async block, as not as in normal F# code. I need to convert this call into a call to async open text, which is something provided by the F# library. And I need to add this bang here. And I can do the same here. And what this will now do is sort of split up your this code into asynchronous continuations, if you will. So this will execute until here, then it will go off in the background and sort of read the text in the background and sort of suspend this code until the hard drive has come back with, okay, I've opened this file now. Then it will continue processing, it will read the file and again do this in the background in an asynchronous way and suspend sort of this computation and go back to and then go back to the rest of your code. You can also see this in the types here. Please. Come on. You can also see this in the type here. Remember that our original function get temperatures returns a sequence of date times and floats. Well, this now returns an asynchronous sequence of date times and floats. That means that when I call the getTemperature function, it will not return immediately, but it will sort of wait. It will be a sort of suspended computation that I can run with some utility functions from the async library, which is also defined in F# later. So let's go and do that. So notice that this is now not right again because the climate analyzer takes as input parameter a sequence of date times and floats, while now the getTemperatures functions returns an async of date time and floats. So what we need to do is convert this. And now I always sort of forget how to go about that. I will just do it like this. So let's see what's going on here. So we're taking a list of station names. We're using the function getTemperatures on each of those names, which, as you saw before, each of these getTemperatures calls returns this async computation. So we now have what comes out here. Let me actually just show you. If we just do this, what comes out here? Is a sequence of async date time and floats, right? So this sequence of asyncs, they are computations that still need to be run. And you can do that in parallel by using the combinator, async parallel, or the function async parallel, which takes as parameter one of these sequences, one of these sequences of computations and just runs all of them in parallel. That's what it does. And it returns a new async, which you can then run by calling async run synchronously, right? So now, what we have as a result here is this array of sequence of date, time, and floats. Which I just give a new name here. So now we'll get back to my climate analyzer. I think this should work. Okay, seems to work. So I've used a new function here, zip, which just takes two lists and zips them together, sort of like a zipper. Just takes pairwise elements and makes a new list of the two, which I need here to merge back again the temperatures that I have here and the station names that I got as an argument to be able to pass one by one in my climate analyzer constructor. So, unfortunately, it is kind of hard to actually really show you that this is, I can show you that it works, but of course there are no more flashing lights or whatever than in, it's not compiled yet. You don't actually see that it's running asynchronously, but it is really doing asynchronously, trust me. Okay, so now it is running. So it's doing the same thing, really, but except it is now doing this asynchronously. And it was fairly easy to convert this code, this synchronous code, into the asynchronous. Because imagine what you would have to do if you would use the normal .NET async pattern, right? You would have to define three methods, having them call each other with their continuations and their callbacks and all that stuff, and it would get fairly complicated. Well, this sort of makes your code still easy to read and still sort of sequential, but it is really asynchronous. And you can do more interesting stuff with this as well. You can sort of post back to a UI thread automatically. You can run them in parallel. Do all kinds of there are interesting ways to combine these computations. So this is almost the end. The point of this second demonstration was that I wanted to show you that this, because all we have used really from F# is three major things, right? Two keywords and one operator, let to define new values, fun to define anonymous functions, and the pipeline operator. That's almost everything that we've used all the way down. And even in a kind of messy domain, they do still scale up, and that has been my experience using F# as well. The stuff does scale up even to more interesting and complicated problems. So F# is not only functional. You can do imperative programming with it. You can do object-oriented programming. Everything that you can do in C#, as far as object orientation is concerned, you can do in F# as well. So you don't actually lose out on anything if you use F#. You just gain new stuff. And it's sort of easy to do asynchronous programming with it. And there are other ways of doing parallel and this kind of sort of multi-core stuff with it as well. So before we sort of conclude, are there any questions about this part? Or this was also Chris. Yes. Okay, the question is, what does the let bang meant? Well, I didn't go into that sort of on purpose because it is quite complicated. Basically, what it does is, this is here. You have to use it whenever, because this async open text, what it does, if you compare it with a normal open text would just return you the stream reader. The async open text returns to you an async stream reader. And the let bang allows you, and this file is still the stream reader. So the let bang means take this stream reader out of the async and put it into my variable so that I can use it in what comes as it would be a normal stream reader. So that's different from the let. The let just would, if I would just put let here, it would just show me an async stream reader, right? This type is async stream reader. If I put the let bang here, it becomes a stream reader all of a sudden. What it's actually doing at runtime is suspending the computation at this point until the open text returns asynchronously, and then it will continue this with the rest. So all the points where there are let bangs actually are sort of synchronization points where you stop, go into the background, do something, and come back to it later. That's sort of the abstraction that this let bang, together with this async open thing, does. Yeah, in this situation there wouldn't be much advantage. I agree, because there are two async calls here next to each other. But normally, I would say in this case, for example, in the second line, it makes it much easier to read just what you are doing, because your code looks just like it's sequential, while really is doing stuff in the background. And if you would do this in sort of the typical way, you'd have to define two methods, right? You have to fire up an asynchronous thread and give it a callback method and have that call, or you would have to use lambdas in C# or so, stuff like that. But this really looks very sequential and makes it easier to work with. So I realized that I haven't gone at all to the bottom of this async stuff and this computation expression stuff, but that's just because that would be a presentation all in itself, right? You can define your own computation expressions, you can define your own whatever my async or my very useful for other stuff as well. You just have to look into that. This is quite let's say advanced stuff. Other questions? You can ask questions. Yeah, okay.
If you link to the F# library, can you use the other file.async methods?
If
you link from C# to the F# library,
I guess you could, but you wouldn't have the computation expression stuff, sort of the syntactic sugar that makes it easier to read. So I wouldn't see really the point in that. If you're interested in that stuff, using it from C#, I suggest you look at reactive library RX, which does sort of the same thing, but sort of integrates it with Link, because these computation expressions are also closely related to Link, really. So if you want to use it from C#, I'd advise that. Yeah?
Are there any things that F# is particularly good for and particularly useful for? What is it suitable for?
Okay, so the question is, are there any things that F# is usable for or not? It's basically, I would say, that's a good question, really. So what let's just say what F# doesn't have is designer support. It will not have designer support in the first release with Visual Studio 2010. So if you want to do, let's say, WinForms or WPF, you're going to need, in any case, a C# project or a VB project to host your your designer stuff, your top UI layer. Other than that, and the same sort of goes for, I guess, for ASP.NET and all that stuff, which I'm not really an expert on. But other than that, you can do, I would choose it over C# always for all the rest, really. It takes some time to get used to it. I grant you that. But, as far as the language goes, you can do anything you can do in C#. Or in VB, you can do in F# and more. And it makes it much more terse, it makes it much more shorter, clearer. Your code really, really becomes much clearer. It has a lot of nice properties. The only big limitation I would say is that there's no designer support. That's about it. More? How about testing?
Something new, paradigm mapping, not just unit testing with any unit or MS test?
That's a good question. I started with this F# thing by starting an open source project, which is called FS Check. And what it does, it goes a bit further than traditional unit testing by allowing you to define basically properties that should hold over your, you can see, look at these as parameterized unit tests. And what FS Check will do is generate random data to sort of drive that unit test and see that your property or whatever your specification or whatever you want to call it holds over a large number of test cases. So it's sort of, in certain cases, it can relieve the programmer from sort of inventing test cases and example, but just really writing a parameterized case and doing it. And testing becomes, in a sense, if you're writing in a very functional style, even without all this fast check business, it becomes easier to test your program because your function is much more modularized because you're not using mutation. All the dependencies of your functions are its arguments, right? So that's what you have to test. And the result is what needs to come out, and it will not do anything else. So this function becomes very modular. It's very easy to reason about and also easy to test. If you want to use NUnit or MSUnit or MDUnit or whatever, you can use that with F#. The easiest probably to use is XUnit, because this allows you also to test easily static members. And all these top level let functions are really just static members on a class, so that makes it sort of easier to use. But that's just more. You can think about it for a while I just show you some pointers. So the first place to go to for F# stuff is probably the F# Developer Center. There are many F# team members that are active on various fora. The main one for F# is called the Hub, but there are also a few members active on Stack Overflow. There's an F# aggregate feed, and then I give also a link to the Luca Bolognese talk that you will sort of recognize when you see it. A few books. These are fairly old now, and this can be quite confusing in the sense that F# has gone through a series of betas, and it's really a fairly old language in the sense that it started as a Microsoft research language, so it has gone through quite a few iterations. So these books are a bit out of date in places, probably. I would still recommend them, but I know that there will be updates to some of these books later on, so it might be worth waiting for them. The top two are out now, I think. And these are fairly recent. Certainly, Programming F# has just arrived in our office last week. And the two bottom ones, Beginning F# and the Definitive Guide to F# are really updates to books that I showed in the previous slides. So Don Syme is really the creator of F#. So if you want the Definitive Guide, as it is called, then that is certainly what I would recommend.